Hello.
Good afternoon. How's everyone doing? Great. You're in an infrastructure as a service session. How could it get any better than this? Okay, that's what I'm talking about. My name is Corey Sanders. I'm going to start off the session today. George Moore is going to take it over when we get to the security part, and we'll spend a little bit of time talking about infrastructure as a service. Just to get kind of a feel for sort of the level of experience we've got in the room, how many people have actually played with infrastructure as a service on Azure? Okay, a good amount. We will end up actually sort of going through, this is the intro session, so we will go through a bit of the details on how it works. We do talk a little bit about how some folks are using it and how it connects to other services in the platform. We also do have a what's new session for infrastructure as a service that goes really deep into a lot of the new features that have been announced. So just to kind of give you a sense of what you're in for. So let me just start off by very sort of simple picture of sort of what is infrastructure as a service. It's very, very easy, right? No networking, compute, and storage, pretty simple. And then you may be saying to yourself, well, wait a second, I already have that. Why am I here? Well, let me tell you a little bit about why you're here. So I think when we look at sort of what you may already have or what you're trying to do in your sort of on-premises or private environment, there's a few places where I think Azure can really be helpful. One, infrastructure service and virtual machines in Azure are really powerful when it comes to agility. It really makes it easy to do very fast dev test, very fast provisioning. This pre-built marketplace that you've heard a little bit about, we'll spend some time on. Integrated operations, so you're able to completely control and manage your virtual machines without ever having to log into them. And of course, this pay per use, this per minute usage. So it adds a lot of value in being able to do that fast deploy, that very quick, agile usage of these virtual machines. But that's sort of not all. We really like to think a lot about the extension that this offers. And I'll walk through a lot of these capabilities. Automation, which is generally available as of today, allows you to do a lot of PowerShell control on top of your virtual machines in a scheduled fashion. Unified Identity, of course, can bring your Active Directory identities into the cloud and allows you to leverage those for being able to control access to your assets. Operational Insights, you saw this morning. Very powerful, very cool new capability to be able to take the learnings from your virtual machines and be able to put them together into an overall picture. DR and backup, Azure Site Recovery, we'll spend some time on that. And then, of course, being able to take all of that together and be able to do some big data, big computation on it. I won't spend too much time on Hadoop or machine learning today, but we will sort of talk about that as possible services to add on here. So just to get started, what I'm going to do is just do a quick, sort of simple, you know, what are we even talking about here? Allow people who maybe didn't realize they were in this session to leave still. They can come in and say, wow, this is not what I wanted. You may already be saying that after my intro. No. Okay. So just to get started, I wanted to show you this is the preview portal. We actually will be using our demos in two different portals today. This is sort of the newest one, but it doesn't have all of the capabilities of the existing portal, so we're going to be bouncing a little bit to show both, but I always like to start off with the new one. And so you can see here, right off the bat, some of the power and agility that you can get. You can come in right in the new portal and spin up a multi-VM SQL Server always-on solution. Right off the bat, click it and go. Which, actually, maybe I will. And so you can go in here. This will spin up, actually, multiple virtual machines. And so it's filling in some of the initial settings here. Okay, there we go. So I'll pick a name here. Okay, my username to access it. Passwords. Okay. I can go and configure specific SQL settings if I want to. I'll leave those as the default. Specific configuration, domain join perhaps, virtual network if I want to. I'll explain these a little bit later. I'm going to go ahead and pick my subscription that I want. See here? A little bit slow. So from this pull-down menu, when it loads, it'll allow me to select the different subscriptions that I may want to deploy into and be able to select perhaps I wanted to put this into my test subscription or my production subscription. Or neither of them for now. Let's see here. Well, We'll come back to this. Oh, you know what it is? It's Chrome's fault. Let's reload here. All right, well, we'll come back to that. You can imagine how great that would have been if VMs had created. Okay, moving forward. So I wanted to spend a minute sort of when you look at Azure, what does it bring to the table? You know, why is this an interesting offer? What are we doing that makes this interesting to you? And there's sort of three big areas that I look at, and we'll be spending more time throughout the session on them. One is this operational cost model. The pay-per-use is really one of the value props that you can get by being able to deploy inside an Azure virtual machine. And maybe you're wondering yourself, well, great, but I don't get sort of how that works, right? Like, how are you guys making money on this? Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I will tell you. The key thing about the operational model is when you look at sort of a public cloud provider, you look at Azure, the value is really about the fact that not everyone peaks at the same time, right? And so when you look at our ability to charge per use, the entire focus is on the fact that not everyone's going to do everything at the exact same time. And so it allows us to basically get out this massive scale to be able to support all the workloads in the world and assume that when you put them all together, the peaks won't add up. And so in this case, when you put together the holiday shopping with tax season, you end up not seeing the same spikes, so then we can purchase the hardware that matches both and be able to make sense of it. And then you sort of add the full range of all the possible workloads, and they all come together with us being able to offer that per use with the assumption that when you're spiking, someone else is not spiking. And that's sort of how that model works and why it can be operational costing instead of a static CapEx price. The other big aspect of Azure that's really exciting is that rate of innovation. The ability for us to bring new features and new capabilities at a pace that you want and need to be able to use them. This is the slide you saw this morning for the last 12 months. I'll be spending actually quite a bit of time on a lot of the IaaS features, but they do run the full range across the entire platform. And then finally, this global coverage. The ability to actually have these instances run anywhere in the world. Right, and so you may have your own data center, you may have your own machines that you're managing and running, but you may not have them in two sites, or you may not have them in four sites, and you want those extra sites, let's say, for backup or for proximity to your customers. This is really where a lot of this value can come in. You don't have to replace what you've currently got, but you can extend out and use that additional global coverage to be able to extend your application or your service or your DR story. And of course, as we mentioned this morning, a total of 19 regions. The final point that I will mention is, of course, our security. The best thing that we've got protecting our security is Darth Vader. Unfortunately, I didn't have rights to put Darth Vader on the slide, so it's just a white box right now. But you can imagine what Darth Vader would have looked like. No, he's not actually protecting our data center. Our data centers are actually protected by a slew of solutions, whether they be partner or first party. And George is going to dig into these later. In the last portion of the presentation, focusing on compliance and a bunch of partners that we actually just announced today. In fact, half of the partners on this slide we announced new today, and the features on this slide, the networking controls are new today as well, including force tunneling and multiple vNICs and IP ACLing. So you'll hear a lot more about that later, but these are all brand new. Okay. From there, let me actually dig in to sort of how applications work in infrastructure as a service. What are the pieces that put this together? So I'll start at the simple one, which is storage. So for storage, when you look at the deployment of storage, a normal virtual machine that deploys, you get two disks right off the bat. You get your C drive, and this is for Windows. Same thing for Linux, except they're obviously not C and D. You get your C drive, which has a cache attached to it, and your D drive, which is temporary. Do not put anything important on that initial D drive. It can get lost. It is meant to be temporary. And it's very sad if data gets lost in that environment. So this C drive ends up being backed by Azure blobs. So these are just your standard blobs in Azure. And if you attach any data disks, these also get backed by Azure blobs. So E, F, and so on. And so let me actually show you what this looks like. Okay. See, this did start responding. How about that? Okay, I'm going to minimize this, though. So Here I've got a virtual machine, and this is the existing portal. This is the production portal that we've got. And so you see I'm sitting on a virtual machine. So I came in here. Let me actually just walk you through how I came in. So over here on the left, you can see the whole pane of all the different services that we offer, from things including virtual machines, mobile services, HE Insight, that's our Hadoop offering. And you scroll all the way down, there's machine learning, and of course the new the marketplace and Store Simple down there at the bottom. So I go into virtual machines, and I'm going to click on my VM with disks. And so let me just quickly show you, this is a VM that's running right now. And you'll see here I have one OS disk and one data disk. So I'll actually connect into that VM. And so here you see I have my OS disk. It's just got Windows on it. And I've got the log disk that's got 200 gig, and it's completely empty, actually, and attached. Okay. And so let me show you. This is Azure Storage Explorer. Just to show you, this is my storage account. So these are just blobs that are in my storage account. And so you can see here, VM with disks. Here's this VHD, and it's just sitting here. It's a VHD. I could download it if I wanted to, connect it on premises using Hyper-V, and be able to use it. I can convert it, right, to any format that I want, maybe VMDK, and be able to use it in that way. And so here I've also got that 200 gigabyte disk that I see in there. I can also do something with that, like, let's say, copy it to my backup folder. And so here, with that, I hit copy. And because it's using Azure Storage in the back end, it's actually a shadow copy. So that's an immediate copy. It's a copy on write. It's available for me right now to be able to sort of back up that moment in time. Now, if I'm running that virtual machine, I may say to myself, well, great, I have a log file. But if I'm going to put SQL on here, I certainly need a data file. So let me go back and say attach. Now, I can attach an empty disk. And this will allow me to select a size up to 1 terabyte, right? And so I can go up and pick a size, and it'll give me an unformatted disk. I go in and do whatever I want to with it. Or I can attach one that I've already created. So in this case, I do have this 800 gigabyte disk. So I'll go ahead and attach that. So if I go back over here, this is this disk, this VHD that's sitting in my storage account, and I'm attaching that now as well. Okay. And so while that's attaching, let's actually go inside the machine. And so because this is already formatted, the disk should just pop up as an 800 gigabyte disk that's available for me to use. It should. Let's see here. Oh, it would. Let me reconnect. And so the limits that you can get on these disks, the largest size disk right now supports 16 attached 1 terabyte disks, so you can get up to 16 terabytes. We'll actually be announcing either later this week or next week that we'll go up to 32. So we'll actually be able to support the attaching of 32 1 terabyte disks to one of these boxes. If you stripe them, you can get up to 32 terabytes. So there you go. The disk got attached. It's the G. It's 800 gig. And now it's available for me to go copy anything I want to on it. Okay, slide back over. And so because these are backed in Azure Storage, we end up doing triplicate copies. So every write, is triplicate copied on these boxes before we come back and say it's done. This gives you that high durability that Azure Storage promises. Like I said, it's 1 terabyte per disk with a 16 terabyte total. And as I also mentioned, we're going up to 32 very soon. The maximum IOPS per disk, as Mark showed this morning, is 500. This means 8,000 is the total you can get. Premium storage, which I'll mention later, is going to bump this up a lot. So the other aspect that you get for free out of Azure Storage is you can get geo-replication. So just by flipping this on, you actually can geo-replicate between regions, defending against regional disaster. And those geo-replicas can be read access. So you can get access to those replicas, make sure they look right, even pull them aside and do testing against them, even doing BI against them if you want to. All of that is possible using that geo-replication solution. And so you may say to me, well, hey, it's geo-replicating, but how do I know which region it's going to? Well, I'm glad you asked that. I've color-coded here the georeplication regions. So you'll see here we do our very best to keep things within the geopolitical zone of that data center. So the two European data centers, as an example, are the two sort of rocky, I ran out of colors, the two rocky ones up there, the top there, the laser pointer works. Those two are replicated to each other. There's no replication that goes from there back to the States or anywhere else. Okay. So that's sort of the background on storage. The other additional aspect that's very cool that you can use on these virtual machines is just attaching an SMB share. So you can go ahead and attach an SMB share using Azure Files. And what this gives you is the ability to have even more disks if you want them. And so this SMB share is SMB 2.1. It allows you to do connection across multiple virtual machines to the same share. So the most common cases we see for this is perhaps a single place for diagnostics, perhaps shared settings that you may want to use, or you may want to use it for gathering an application that you want to install onto multiple virtual machines. For a lot of cases, it may just be you want to add additional disks, and the 32 or 16 is not enough. And we have seen people use that as well. And so it adds a lot of power for some of those lift and shift applications that may require additional disks or shared disks to be able to be used. So on top of all of that, as has been announced, we will be releasing premium storage, which will be a faster SSD-based storage that will offer, by the time it comes out, those 32 terabytes of disks with more than 50,000 IOPS. And when using the read cache, you'll be able to get 1 millisecond or less on that latency. And so it ends up actually using the local SSDs on the box for caching. And so we've built a fairly complex caching system to be able to try and speed up those read access that you may have for your virtual machine, which makes it very powerful for things like data warehouse solutions, where it has a large amount of reads and maybe fewer writes, or a chunk of writes at one period of time. And so it enables some better performance on those types of solutions, and that's really what we're gearing towards when we think about premium storage. And sort of the last way you'd interact with images and with disks is a solution called the virtual machine image. And so what this offers is the ability to capture all of the disks that are attached to a virtual machine and be able to replicate it. So what you can do is you can take a machine with 2, 3, 4 disks attached, and you can take a copy of that whole thing and reproduce it multiple times. The nice part about this, you can do it whether you're using SysPrep or not. So it can take a running VM and without SysPrep, recreate it. Now you have all the problems that can come with that. It'll have the same exact name. And so if you put it on the same network with the other one, Windows gets a little bit ornery. But that is something that you are able to do if you want to. And you can deploy as many of these as you want. And so that's how we sort of bring together all of the pieces of storage. So we offer you that lowest layer blob and VHD that you can go manipulate, but then we also offer that higher level abstraction. If you'd rather just deal with images and not deal with all those individual blobs, you can also work there. And so it allows a little bit of that variability. Okay. So that's the storage portion. From a compute perspective, I want to start off just giving an overview of the sizes we have and have announced, just so you have a sense of all the different options. So the standard size that we've had for quite a while, actually, is the A family. The A family is what I'd probably call the highest value. It's the lowest cost of the sizes. It offers both a basic and a standard. So what the distinction is here, basic actually comes in a few different things. One, it reduces slightly the CPU performance, so the basic will be a little bit slower than your standard. And so the main reason for this is if you're looking for that full memory access, but you don't need as much of the CPU, Basic becomes a pretty nice option for you to be able to use. We see Basic both in the production side and in the dev test side. For the A family, we offer both the general purpose compute, but we also offer the high memory. And so general purpose compute, the ratio is 1.5 to 1 when it comes to memory to CPU, and high memory is 7 to 1. And that's kind of the way we distinguish the two, and then we go up in increments of 2x as we go up in size. And then the high performance, which is two special ones, the A8 and A9, which are 56 gig and 112 gig, they actually have an advanced network that's connected to them. So they have a second NIC that you can use to connect between instances that's InfiniBand based. And it's also got an RDMA driver that you can install on those VMs. The RDMA driver today is only available on Windows. We are working to bring it into Linux as well. And so this is a really optimal solution for when you're doing high performance workloads, MPI type workloads where there's a lot of communication between instances. It's also, right today, the fastest CPU that we have. It's a much faster CPU than the other A series and allows you to do those types of calculations and compute. So just a month ago, we actually announced the D series. And these end up offering, it's a newer generation of CPU. It's 60% faster than the A series. And it goes up to 112 gig. So the A series, other than A9, the A series high memory goes up to 56. This one now goes up to 112. This is available today in all regions. And it has a local SSD storage. This is that temporary storage. It's used, meant to be used for a cache. It's meant to be used for maybe pool buffer on SQL. It's not meant to be used for any persistent data. And then, as we've mentioned, the G family, which is not yet available, but coming. And when it comes, it will be available probably in a limited set of regions. This is optimized for those data workloads. It has a gigantic amount of memory to CPU and a very large amount of SSD to CPU. So the sizes, it goes up to 32, 448, and 6.5 will divide by 2 down. So that's the largest size. The full list of sizes you can actually find on the Azure blog. We have the full details of the sizes. And this does use the latest generation Intel processor. So when you're putting together these instances, you probably want to put them together in a way that you can get high availability. Right? You're looking to deploy an application. You want 395 uptime. You want as much uptime as you can get. And so the solution that we offer here is what's called an availability set. And so this gives you an SLA with Azure. We give you a promise of uptime. It protects you against both hardware and software problems in the stack. And it is supported for both Windows and Linux. I have SQL as my example here, but I want to call out that it does work, of course, on Linux as well. And so how this actually works, the points of failure that we have in our data centers are two big points. One is the physical machine, and one is the power unit and network unit that's in each rack. And so we know where these are located. We know all the machines that are deployed in this way. And so one of the powers that we bring to the cloud is we're able to offer a solution that you say, look, I have two machines. I want to avoid these points of failure. So go ahead and deploy my two virtual machines across two of these racks. This will protect me against, you see here, I've got them deployed in rack 1 and rack 3. This will protect me against any single rack going down, any single physical machine going down, the power unit, the top of rack switch. All of them now we're protected against, which gives you that promise of high availability. And so in this case, if this third rack goes down, the first one stays up. And this is how we're able to manage this. And I'll show you this actually in a little bit. The final piece that's worth spending some time on is the network. So that high availability is great, right? You can separate those machines. But if you can't control the traffic that spans across them both, it doesn't really serve that much of a purpose. Well, with load balancing in Azure, you can control the traffic. And so with load balancing, you can actually set this up so that you can have multiple machines deployed, and you can control the load balancer to span traffic across all of them. Our load balancer supports both internal and external, which I'll show you a slide later. It can be TCP or UDP, and you can control ACLs on it. We recently announced just today that you actually can turn on client affinity as well. Now, this isn't a full layer 7 load balancer, but it does allow you to get an IP-based affinity and try and make sure that that always goes to the underlying machine. And that's available today using PowerShell. The other aspect of this is probing. So today, if you turn this on, you can probe and have the load balancer automatically probe based on, let's say, a TCP port. If it's live, if it's responding, the machine will be kept in rotation of that load balancer. If the TCP port stops responding, the load balancer will automatically stop sending traffic to that machine, as any good load balancer. We also do support custom probes. And so here you can actually say, I want the probe to check this address. And if I don't return 200, okay, on that address, stop sending me traffic. It gives you a lot more granular control in your application to be able to stop traffic if you want to. And so, like I said, there's load balancing both externally and internally. External is what you'd expect. You can deploy, you can connect either from your on-premise environment or from a location out there in the ether, and we will load balance that traffic. You can also connect inside your customer network and be able to have the traffic never leave that internal network. That could also be how you connect a front end to a back end. And so here you see I could load balance an internal load balancer from my front end to my back end and get that high availability on my back end without the traffic ever leaving the network. And so this allows a lot of secure communication between instances or even from within your own corporate domain when talking to these instances. And so piece this all together. And so again, you have this instances in an availability set that's spanning across two racks, add a load balancer on top, and then you've got network and physical availability across the stack. And this is what the high availability features offer you. So that third rack goes down, the load balancer detects it and sends all of the traffic to the first rack. So let me actually show you briefly what that actually looks like. Okay, so here, I've got virtual machines here deployed, and so let me actually zoom in over here. And so here you can see I have Cori VM 1 through Cori VM 6, and these are all in a load balance set and an availability set. So let me actually show you. Go over to endpoints, and so you can see here I have a bunch of endpoints set up. I've got the direct access endpoint, which I'll show you, just the normal HTTP, which is load balanced. And then I've got a few others, RDP and remote WinRM. And so the load balance one, let's actually go in and edit. And so here you can see the set of load balanced virtual machines in the list. It goes out from 1 to 6, and it's on port 80. You can see my probe intervals every 15 seconds. And two probes don't respond, and I'll stop sending traffic. And I can configure all of this. Okay? These are also all in an availability set. So I go over to configure here, and you can see I've got all my instances in an availability set. Okay? And so that means these are spread out as much as possible across at least two racks. And so if I go to this machine, let me actually go here and get the address. Oops. All right, just copy. Nope, not what I wanted. Okay. All right. Okay, so here we go. I went to this site. Okay, I hit VM1. If I hit refresh, VM6, VM1, VM4, And so I can continue to hit refresh, and this load balancer is sending me around on these instances. Right now, the default setting for the load balancer is actually a 5-tuple system. The main reason why I'm moving between instances is because IE picks a different outbound port every time it sends the traffic out. So the instances, the load balancer says, oh, it's a different client. It's a different client. With client-based load balancing, you can actually add affinity to stop it from bouncing. But for the sake of this demo, of course, I wanted to show you that it was bouncing. And so that's that. You can also add, you know, I ended up adding direct ports here. So I can go in and say, you know, let's just go to the fourth one. And so, you know, I go 30,004, and I've opened up that port just to the fourth one instead of load balancing it. Okay. Excellent. Whoops. And so the last conversation around networking that's particularly interesting is hybrid connectivity. And so far we've talked a lot about your storage system, your disks. We've talked about the VM sizes that you can get, how the storage system works together with those VMs. We've also talked a little bit about how your outbound network looks like, your load balancer, how to configure it. But really one of the key aspects is you want this to be an extension of your on-premises network. Right? And so what does that look like? Well, with the hybrid connectivity options that we offer in Azure, you have a few choices. First, you can define your subnets, your private IPs, and your DNS. Right? So this is all software-based. So I'll show you how to go in. You can go change that DNS IP. You can go add subnets. And as George will show you later, you can even ACL between those subnets. And so all that's defined with software in the portal. Then for connectivity, there's three big options. One, which I'll demo, is completely SSL-based. It actually allows you to get a single dev box, let's say, and be able to connect to that virtual network as if it were on that local network of that machine. And so you can use 10-dot address ranges and connect. It makes it really easy to be able to do that dev test from anywhere. And because it's just SSL, it just goes through 443, it allows you to manage that in a much simpler way. Now, obviously, if you want to connect more broadly to your corporate network, you end up probably wanting at least a VPN device, which we do support. There's a wide range of solutions for VPN that we offer, and you can connect that straight to our gateway that we deploy on your behalf. It's highly available, and you can connect to it and have all those machines show up as if they're a part of the same network, using the same subnets and private IPs and DNS that's been defined. And that's the main reason why we actually need to let you define your subnets, because you probably have a network already created. Right? You can't just take a network that we gave you. You've got to come in and say, this is the address space I've got for the cloud, so this is what I want to define. And that's why all of that needs to be configurable. And then the last, which we've talked a little bit about, is called ExpressRoute. And this is geared towards a partner connection support. And so what this offers you is the ability to connect to either a carrier hotel, something like Equinix, and be able to plug in directly that way, or to work directly through a telco. And so we have a wide range of telcos. We've actually moved from 9 to 11. You can see a few here, BT, Verizon, AT&T. And so we continue to grow this list of partners to be able to connect these telcos. And the idea is each one of these telcos has their own portal on Azure. And so you go in and call and say, hey, BT, I want to connect to, I don't know if you use your phone or your hand. I want to connect to Azure. And so when you connect, they go in and configure this. And they've already got a hard line to us. And so it allows you to get the same level of security, the same level of throughput that you're seeing from your telco straight into Azure. It really simplifies the process. So let me show you briefly what that virtual network experience looks like. So here, I'm actually already in the virtual network section. And so you can see here, it's one of the options on my left. It's a virtual network option. And I've got VNet as the name, very cleverly. And so I'm here, and I've got my virtual network set up. And as you can see, I've got the DNS server ready to roll. So my DNS server is going to be 10.20.2.4. I can change this. I can add a second one. And it actually sends these out using DHCP. So it uses DHCP to go configure the virtual machines running in Azure and just configures the DC with that. So if you change this, the VMs do need a reboot or a reset to be able to get that updated info. And so then I picked the address space. I ended up picking the full address space possible here from the 10.0. And so I picked some subnets. And so here I've got an app subnet. I've got a DC subnet, and my gateway is already defined. So I could go in and add a subnet if I wanted to. Playnet, let's say. And I can go in and pick it. And the beauty of this UI, for at least me, is that it shows both the CIDL format and the actual raw number. I always have a hard time with that conversion. I'm sure many of you in the room are very, very good at that fast conversion. But here you can see, you know, slash 29 is 3, slash 28 is 11, and you can go in and select whatever you want to do, and of course add that address space and be able to go. So I'm not going to this time. But what I am going to do is take a look here at this virtual network configured, and you'll see that I have one machine, one virtual machine deployed in this virtual network. And it's deployed, its IP address is 10.20.1.4. Okay, let me actually zoom in. Okay. Okay, and so this is its IP address, obviously not an internet-facing address. Okay. And so I've actually set this up to be my SSL-based connectivity. So what I've done ahead of time, just so you know, to make it sort of faster, I've actually downloaded the VPN client connection already. And so what this ends up doing is programming an entry in Windows to just be able to connect using SSL with a cert that I gave it as my private cert. And so just to show you, here you see I've got VNet. So I installed this last night, actually, and now it allows me to connect from just this box using SSL. And so I'll go in and hit connect. It actually has to change the routes out to make sure that the address space that's programmed here does route to the gateway. And so just like that, I'm now connected. And so this address, which I normally would not be able to reach, I'll go ahead and open this up and connect with that address. And so you'll see here, 10.20.1.4, deployed in a virtual private network. And now I'm able to log in, and I can see here I'm not activated. That's because my DNS is not up. And so you can see here, this is the address. Let me zoom in. Oops, zoom it doesn't work if I'm not there. Good. There you go. So that's my address. It's that local address. It's a virtual network. It's defined as part of that software-defined network. And so just to show you, if I then disconnect from this SSL connection, it immediately goes away. And so I can no longer access that. Okay. Let me slide back over. Okay. Excellent. So those are the basics. Putting together the compute, the storage, and the network with a virtual network and the load balancer, it gives you the ability to do most of the application support that you may want. So now there's a few other things that are worth spending some time on. First is some of the connected services that then you can now use with these virtual machines to really take full advantage of them in the cloud. And I'm going to spend some time on those, and then George is going to spend even more time on those and the security constructs. So the main ones really to mention are automation, operation insights, the DevOps story, migration, DR, and then identity. So for Azure Automation, like I said, GA today, the key thing with this is it allows you to automate operation tasks. It effectively uses PS runbooks and can use pull from the community to be able to deploy and launch PowerShell onto virtual machines that are running as part of your service. It's triggered by schedule or by event, and it's running on the back end in Azure on a highly available service. So let me actually show you how you may use this in your virtual machines in Azure. And so you see here I've moved down to automation. It's another tab here in my left pane. And so here's automation, and I've got an account that allows me to deploy automation. From here I go over to runbooks. And so from this I've set up a few. The first one that I set up is called GetKBList. And so I'll go to author. And right in the portal, you see, I've got an experience to be able to write my PowerShell. So if I want to do this to go manage my instances, you know, I've already got the ability to connect into the box. And so right here I can connect in and I can pass in parameters that I hand it. And so in this case, this one actually checks to see on that running box whether I've got a security fix installed. Right? So it'll actually run, make sure that it's installed, make sure that it's working, and check and make sure that I'm basically living up to the policy of the system. And so I've actually run it a couple times. So let me go over to jobs and show you. And so every time I run it, you can click in and see. And so I ran it here at 11:05 a.m. And so here's the output. And so it goes straight into this information so I can run this on a regular schedule. I can run it every day and make sure that it's always up to date with this KB, for example, or whatever you may want to do. And so let me give you a sort of a tangible example. Maybe you're not always going to go scan your machines for KBs installed. You may. But let me give you kind of another example. I've got a shutdown one. And this one's actually pretty interesting. There are real customers out there who have built very complex systems using automation around shutting down VMs. Because of that whole point I mentioned earlier, the pay per use, well, part of the value of that comes with making sure you do shut down when you're not using them. And so here, I can go in and I can actually edit this and go in, let's see, author. And so in this case, I'm shutting down the machine. And so just to show you sort of what this looks like, why don't I go ahead and schedule this, link to new schedule, and say, let's say, turn off machine now. Okay. And so I'm going to say one time. My clock is actually still on Pacific time, so I'll have to use that here. So let's say 8 a.m., which is 5 minutes from now. Okay. Wait. Oh. Huh. 8:05. Okay. And so we'll go ahead and schedule that, and we'll come back later on as after one of our other demos is done and be able to see whether that virtual machine is actually stopped. And so the cases that you use this and people actually do use it in this way is, hey, Friday night, 5 p.m., all my dev test machines get shut off, right? Make sure that that happens. Make sure I'm calling it through the Azure API and shut them all down, and I won't pay for them over the weekend. And it is a very common use case. So there's the VM. So we'll kind of wait for that here. Let me go back and talk. So this is where Azure Automation becomes really powerful in being able to control some of those solutions, being able to set up schedules around that on top of your ISVMs, leveraging that API set that you've got. As was mentioned this morning, operational insights, it's not just for those machines running on premises. You actually can take that agent and put it directly into a machine running in IaaS, in the cloud, and be able to put all that information together. So you may be concerned, virtual machines running in Azure, did I forget to install the patches there like I did on premises? Well, use operational insights to piece all that data together. And you can see what's going on in Azure and what's going on premises, all from the same experience. In fact, we are enable the ability to install the agent for operational insights in an automated way using PowerShell, and we'll be bringing that to the portal as well, where you just click a button and say, operational insights, put it in my box, and we'll make sure that your VMs that run in Azure all have that pre-installed. And like was mentioned this morning, it's fantastic for log management analysis, for monitoring, for troubleshooting, and for storing all of that data. In addition to that, the ability to do ops and DevOps. Now, this leverages a technology that we've got in Azure called extensions. And what this does is it allows us to drop agents and execute them on the box without you ever having to log in. So in this example, you can go straight into the portal and you can say, run this DSC script, run this PowerShell script. You can even type it there and say, run this directly on this box. And you have that full power without logging in or changing the password or anything. It'll go in and it'll go configure it as much as you want. You can even reset your password this way. We also are announcing just today our integration with Octopus. This is a very popular release management tool. And this is now available directly inside an extension that you can deploy and do release management using Octopus. It's a .NET tool. How many people are familiar with Octopus? Anyone? Okay. Me neither. moving forward. All right, Visual Studio Release Manager as well is one of those extensions that you can deploy. And then to sort of top it all off, Chef and Puppet are available as those extensions to deploy for DevOps experiences. And so just to sort of round this out, one thing I wanted to point out, you know, it's funny because Octopus, I had actually never heard of Octopus myself. But we have this nifty site, and this is a shameless plug, feedback.azure.com. It's basically a place for you to go in and vote for what your favorite feature is, what you want in the platform, right? And so you can see here there's a lot of votes, and you see actually I've answered a bunch of these. And so, you know, the top vote is for console access, which is something that we are working on. So we'll stay tuned for that. But here, Octopus is number two. It's number two. So you can go in and vote if you want to and set your votes. So I'm proud to say that we are now, we're going to go ahead and update this as complete. Just announced as complete. All right. Oops, as available, let's say. So the key point here is go in and vote, because we will do this work based on what you say. All right. And so the last capability or sort of extended service that I wanted to mention is the Migration and Disaster Recovery Service. And so I want to focus a little bit on disaster recovery portion specifically. And as part of that, you know, the key thing here, we support Azure Site Recovery, which is the ability to use the Hyper-V replica solution to be able to copy and create these instances in Azure. So it uses infrastructure as a service as that failover point, and so it uses virtual machines and storage up until that point. The InMaj acquisition that we made earlier this year will allow us to extend that to both physical and VMware-based solutions. So now we will be able to support the disaster recovery of all of these solutions, being able to do recovery plans and test failovers. And so I'll actually go ahead and show you that very quickly here, as sort of what that looks like. Okay. It's loading up here. And so using that same portal experience, you can actually go down and there is a tab called Recovery. There it is. And so I'll go in. I've got this example. It's Contoso, India here. Oops. That's terrible. All right. And I'll go and protected items. And so these are machines, virtual machines that are running on premises right now. And, oops, excuse me. I want to go into finance cloud. These are machines running on premises that are being protected right now in Azure. And so the storage behind them is pay as it goes. And they haven't yet deployed into a virtual machine. So they're mostly just being built as storage. And so you can go in and you can sort of see, you could do a test failover if you wanted to. Going in and configuring these, you can actually control whether you want to encrypt them while they're waiting. So you can encrypt them in the back end. The storage account's there. And of course, they are being copied every 5 minutes. They're getting backed up into this environment. Right? And so these are virtual machines that are ready to start. And so a test failover would spin up the machines using these disks and allow you to fail over in the event of a disaster. And so I can go ahead and add virtual machines if I wanted to enable this. And I've got a few more that are not yet enabled. And it would start replicating them. Okay. Oops. And so the last point of integration worth mentioning is Visual Studio and MSDN. Through Visual Studio, you can actually directly connect to an infrastructure as a service VM. You can create and debug them directly from the Visual Studio experience. So you never have to go into the portal. You can connect using that same extension technology. You can actually launch in specific images if you've got an MSDN account. So there's a specific set of images, the Dynamics Nav and GP images, and of course the Windows client images are available for dev test if you do have an MSDN account. And so these are great to be able to sort of do that deployment and do that. And this does give significant savings. So if you're using an MSDN account, you actually do not pay for any of the Microsoft licenses. So the Windows price becomes the Linux price, the SQL price becomes the Linux price, everything becomes the Linux price. So it enables a lot of this ease of deployment and major reduction in savings from the smallest to the largest. For BizTalk, it's like 99% savings because that license is expensive. It's perfectly priced. Okay, moving forward. The last thing I'll mention, and then I'll hand off here to George, is the Docker integration point. This is an exciting partnership that's really talking about the future of where we want to take Windows containers. And it started in Azure. And so with the initial launch of the Docker engine at DockerConf, we announced support for this engine as one of those extensions to be able to deploy directly into Linux VMs in Azure. And so we've continued to grow on this support. You saw the demo this morning. The ability to take a Docker client that's running on Windows and be able to deploy directly into one of these Linux VMs in Azure. The next phase of integration for us is integrating the Docker Hub into Azure. So the Docker Hub's huge amount of content, a ton of these containers that can deploy on Linux, 45,000 roughly, and growing, huge community, and we want to make sure that that's available for easy deployment inside Azure VMs. And so that integration is coming. We are working on that. The other aspect we're working on is to be able to build sort of a collection of containers that can deploy together as part of an open orchestration API with the Docker guys. And so we're working on all these pieces together to try and bring that power that you saw this morning. And then, of course, we'll bring it onto the Windows side. And so with Windows containers, we'll support the same API and the same ability to deploy these solutions that could span both Linux and Windows. So we're really excited about this. We think it's going to be a really interesting area and change a lot of the things that we're working on in the platform. So with that, I'm actually going to turn it over to George, who's going to focus for the rest of the session on enterprise grade. And this is really going to focus on security and our growing ecosystem. So George, take it away.
Hi. Okay, so I'll be talking about, as Corey mentioned, enterprise-grade pieces. And as Jason mentioned this morning in the keynote, we've today, in fact, have announced and are shipping a marketplace of virtual machines that are pre-configured that you can actually go in today and deploy directly from your Azure subscription. And we've announced a variety of partners, a huge variety of different images that are actually up and running. These are pre-configured, pre-built by the partners. And the point here is that, well, there's two points, really. One is that you, as a customer, can directly use these virtual machines today. Second is that we are also allowing anybody who wants to produce an image themselves and sell it through our gallery, through our marketplace, to be able to pre-configure your own machine. Eventually, there'll be a self-service portal where you can upload your own machines, set a price for those, and they can appear in the marketplace, and you can begin the virtuous cycle of selling your own pre-configured virtual machines in our own marketplace. So I'm actually going to give a little demo of this in a little bit. And in addition to the pre-configured marketplace machines, as Corey mentioned, we support a wide variety of Linux distributions. And as was mentioned this morning, a full 20% of our machines today are running Linux. We support Ubuntu. There's a variety of Oracle Linux images, SUSE, and CentOS, and I guess it was just a couple days ago we announced the CoreOS, which is a stripped-down version of Linux that's really well-defined, really well-built, specifically for hosting containers. So as a Docker client, as a Docker Docker facility, it's an ideal distribution vehicle today. And of course, we have a huge community of Linux distributions that are available through a variety of partners. I would encourage you to go up and just peruse and just see all the various Linux distributions as well as community images that we have up and running. So let me do a little quick demo of the marketplace. Switch the machines and go here. Okay. So the easiest thing to do is just simply click New. And I'm going to click on everything so I actually see all the various things in the marketplace, but I'll close it down just to virtual machines. So these are the different categories of virtual machine images that we have available that, in fact, most of these are brand new today that are available through this marketplace. And if you click on one, say, for example, Cloudera, it will come up and tell you all sorts of information about the virtual machine, how it's configured, and a little bit more information about it. I'm actually going to scroll down here into the security section, click on more, and there's a wide variety of security-related virtual machines, security appliances and such that are available. And I'm actually going to drill in here a little bit because I'm going to be showing Cloud Link a little bit later in the demo, but I want to show you how you can create your own Cloud Link server on Azure itself. So Cloud Link is another one of our partners that was launched today. It provides encrypted VHD booting. So you can actually use BitLocker encryption to encrypt your VHD, and the Cloud Link Secure VM server actually manages the key facilities, and I'll be doing a bit of demo of that later. But here I actually wanted to show, let me just click on create, and it will open up a new window off to the side there, and I can choose the different, I can enter the names and such, but let me click the pricing tier. And so it comes up pre-configured with a variety of different best uses for the different sizes, but if I actually want to see all the pricing for all the different virtual machines, these are the ones that Corey mentioned before, the A series, the different prices, the capabilities. You can see the speeds and feeds of all the VMs, and we get down to the D series, and finally top out at the most powerful ones today that are generally available are the D14s and such. So I'm actually not going to create one of these VMs, but the point is that there's a wide variety of virtual machines as well as different processor types I can choose depending upon my workload and how fast or how capable I need to run these different machines. So let's go back to here. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about the security of Azure itself. And so with any good security model, it's a series of concentric rings. And you can think of the outermost one as the physical security of our actual data centers themselves. We have defense in depth at a physical barrier, a physical perspective. We have barriers, fencing, we have armed security guards, 24/7. We have biometric scans. Let's just say it's very difficult for someone to actually make their way into one of our data centers. I can tell you from personal experience that as a Microsoft employee actually working on this product, it was difficult for me to get into the data center, actually see the actual physical machines where my own product is running. So not everybody's going to be able to get there. Once you go inside of the physical machines themselves, there's the software infrastructure that actually runs Azure itself. We take the care and feeding and the maintenance of this software infrastructure very seriously. We run routine. We participate in the secure development lifecycle. Every one of our builds uses static data analysis to look for security errors, security issues. We maintain an entire group of people who do nothing every day but sit around and do penetration testing of Azure. I mean, talk about a sweet, sweet job, just to sit around every day and try to break into Azure and get paid for it. So that's, and we maintain it all day long. Everybody's up and running. And then I'll also be talking a little bit about the compliance pieces in the next slide. And these outer two rings are the ones that Microsoft builds and maintains and keeps up to date. The next ring in is really the networking layer, is around how you can actually, you yourself, start to control the physical security of your actual machines themselves. And I'll be talking a lot about these particular pieces here. In fact, most of these, as Corey mentioned, are new. The forced tunneling, the secure network, subnet ACLs, multiple virtual NICs, these are all brand new as of today. And then the most inner piece is, of course, the VM itself, which is, I'll be talking a lot about how you can actually secure your virtual machines. So taken together, the two outer rings maintained by Microsoft, the two inner rings, we give you the control where you can set up your own defense in depth for your own security from the network and the VM itself. So in the context of that, the next inner ring, the infrastructure ring, we have a great deal of compliance attestations, compliance audits, and compliance certifications that are already in place for Azure today. If you really want to learn a lot about any of these things, I'd urge you to go to the Azure Trust Center. I'll focus specifically on the FISMA FedRAMP one, which is probably our most highest attestation, highest certification we have, which is a set of literally hundreds of controls and processes and all sorts of very precise dictates as to how you maintain and manage the operating system itself and the services. And this is issued by the U.S. federal government. It's maintained or used for federal government-based workloads, but there's a lot of private companies that piggyback on top of this. They say, well, if the cloud provider has FedRAMP or FISMA, it's generally good enough for me because it implies there's a great deal of this attestation. And suffice it to say that with all these different certifications underway, we are constantly under one form of audit at any one time. I mean, pick a day of the week, we are under different audits, but different auditors coming in, turning over rocks, opening up closets, trying to find various things that have changed to keep us up to date with respect to our attestations and our certifications. And so we take this very seriously, and we're constantly evolving and adding new certifications. So please check back for future ones as well. So now let me go in one more level around the networking, and I'll spend the next several slides talking about networking security. One of the things we've added recently is the ability where you can set up durable fixed IP addresses that can be associated with your virtual machines. So the problem, as you can imagine, if you deploy a virtual machine, we will automatically give you a public IP address for that virtual machine. But if you tear it down, well, that public IP address goes back into the free pool, and the next person who comes along may get that same address. Now, this can cause a lot of problems if you especially have a VPN device set up on your corporate network. You want that VPN device to have a trustworthy endpoint that's known to be running your actual workloads. So what we have done now is I've already have reserved IP addresses. So in this example, I have VM1 and VM2 that I've deployed against this fixed durable IP address. And if I tear down VM1 and VM2 and bring it back up now as VM3 and VM4, they can maintain and keep that exact same IP address. So you can have a high degree of confidence that the IP addresses you configure as a gateway on your edge devices in your corporate network are, in fact, talking to the virtual machines you've actually deployed in Azure itself. And as Corey mentioned also, we have direct IP connectivity where you can directly from your corporate device also directly connect up to the virtual machines themselves. So subnet ACLing is a new feature that we ship today. If you think about a typical cloud application that has three tiers, you have a front-end app tier, a middle tier, and a back-end database tier. And the issue is you don't really want those different tiers to be able to talk independently to everybody else. You don't want those machines to have free connectivity to talk to any other virtual machine within your cloud application. There's a variety of reasons for that. One is, obviously, if an attacker were to subvert one of your machines, you don't want that attacker to go be able to probe the other machines in your virtual network. Second, just simple software bugs that you may have your own problems that cause bugs to errantly connect to the wrong machine types. So you can define, actually, now virtual networks, which Corey showed, but now also set ACLing on those virtual networks. So you can ensure, for example, the front-end app tier can only talk to the middle tier, and the middle tier can only talk to the back-end database tier. And furthermore, you can set up an ACL on your VPN so you can ensure that your back-end database tier only talks to your corporate on-premise device and no one else. So in this way, you can really truly lock down not just your virtual machines, but the network by which the virtual machines communicate to everybody else. So another new feature we are introducing today is forced tunneling. So the scenario here is that if you have your back-end database and you want to have, or for that matter, any of the machines in your network need to have outbound connectivity to the internet, what you really want is, in some cases, that outbound connectivity not go directly from the virtual machine directly to the internet. You would like that traffic to be routed through your corporate network so you can have inspection, you can log it, you can audit it, you can do forensics upon it. So if an attacker were to take over one of your machines, you would be able to have at least some degree of tracing and logging as to who's actually doing what on your machine. So with forced tunneling, you can force all outbound traffic on any of your virtual machines to be forced through a tunnel, a VPN tunnel that you've defined within your virtual network and your cloud service. And then multiple virtual NICs is also a new feature we're introducing today. So the typical scenario here is you have a security appliance that's taking in traffic, and you have a data plane, in this case shown by the front end talking to the back end, and you have a control plane, which is the management plane up above. So in this case, you have traffic coming in on the left-hand side that's doing some manipulation of the traffic or logging of the traffic or whatever the case is, and emitting it to your back end. And you want these to be, from a hygienic perspective and isolation perspective, on different subnets, and you want to have them actually talking to different NICs on that virtual machine. And separately, you want the control plane, the management traffic, to be its own subnet with its own NIC talking on the virtual machine. So of the various virtual networks or the actual VMs that we introduced today in the marketplace, a number of these, as you can see, are actually have a high degree of security overlay. And I'll actually be talking about a lot of these in the next couple of demos, one of which is, as Corey mentioned, the notion of extensions. And so in this case, we have a number of different extensions that are available today. In fact, the Microsoft anti-malware endpoint is generally available as of today. So it's now released. You can actually use this. It's a free endpoint extension that you enable on your virtual machine. And also added today is McAfee and Cloud Link. We introduced Symantec and Trend Micro earlier this year, but today we're announcing and shipping McAfee as well as Cloud Link, and I'll show more about Cloud Link in a little bit. And then on the Microsoft malware endpoint protection piece, one of the really nice things is that we, in the portal itself, in the UI, can allow you to go in and directly configure your malware endpoint on your virtual machine. So it provides a nice management surface in the portal, so you don't have to buy a separate product. You don't have to go log into a different machine. You can actually deploy and run this directly and configure it directly within the portal UI itself. And so with Cloud Link is the ability, as I mentioned, of doing encrypted VHD boot. So the scenario here is that you have a variety of VHDs that you wish to protect, either in flight or at rest on a storage device, and you wish to enable encrypted, to be able to decrypt those on the fly dynamically at boot time. So they're actually, when you're up and running, of course they're unencrypted, but any other time statically they are encrypted. So I'll actually give a little demo of this. Let's go back here. So in this case, I have the a virtual machine I've already deployed. This is the CloudML server that I showed you before. This one's actually been pre-deployed, and it's controlling two other machines on my network on Azure that are both have encrypted boot enabled on them. So let me log in as my admin here. And so I bring up this little control panel. So I can click on localhost. And if I click on the secure VM tab, I can see here that I have two machines under control. In this particular demo, I have the secure VM demo itself and a separate data cruncher virtual machine. And you notice here it says encryption policy all. This, both the C and D drives on both machines are encrypted through BitLocker. And in fact, the secure VM demo is this machine I'm showing you here. And I can bring up the viewer here, and you can see a little lock icon on the C and the D drive to prove, in fact, this is under BitLocker encryption while it's actually running in Azure. Now, clearly one of the key parts about this is how do you maintain the keys themselves, because clearly if you lose the keys, then you're kind of real, you know, in deep doo-doo. So they provide in their key store here, one of the ideas, one of the options is you can actually store and back up your keys in Active Directory. So since 94% of the Fortune 1000 run Active Directory, the presumption here is that you have an Active Directory server probably already pre-configured and probably under active backup control and active backup policy. So by storing the keys for CloudML in your Active Directory, you automatically inherit all the backup policies and retention policies you have for your own AD infrastructure. Let's go back. And then one of the final things I want to show is a feature we introduced probably about 3 months ago, role-based access control. This plugs in directly to Azure Active Directory, which in turn, if you followed any of the Azure Active Directory sessions, allows you to do dir sync, directory sync, with your on-prem AD. So the really nice thing here is that your AD infrastructure, meaning your users and groups, can be synchronized up into the cloud and then directly leverage those for policy control upon essentially authorization control on your Azure assets. And so the way the basic model is they, there's an inheritance model where people can be added to different layers in the system and they automatically inherit downwards from their machines and or from their layer there. And as I mentioned before, this allows you to actually synchronize your on-premise AD to the cloud. So let me actually do a demo here. Switch back. Minimize this. Go back to my demo here, tear down all these. And so in this case, I have a virtual machine I had deployed earlier, this machine here. I can click on it, and I can see all sorts of statistics about it. If I scroll down, here at the bottom, you see the roles tab or the roles pane in here. I can click on reader. In this case, I don't have any readers assigned. You notice there were three pre-configured roles, owner, contributor, and reader. This is the initial set that we have for the preview. This is the role-based access control is in technical preview at the moment. Owner, of course, does what you'd expect, has full unencumbered rights to everything within your virtual machine. The contributor role also has full unencumbered rights except the ability to change policy, meaning the contributor cannot add other contributors to the policy. And reader is what you'd expect, to have read-only access. So in this case, I want to add somebody. And so I'll click the Add button. And this little, in this case, a user picker logs in or comes up. And because my identity itself, I'm logged in as georgem@microsoft.com, it is automatically federated with the Microsoft.com corporate directory. And so I can type in Corey Sanders. And it will pick Corey from the list. There's Corey's picture. So I can click check, press done. And then now Corey will be added as a reader to this particular virtual machine. Now, if Corey were to log into the portal now, he would see this new virtual machine would have popped up. He can go in and manipulate and can use or can view the virtual machine, but he can't actually connect to it or actually do any modification to the virtual machine because I only added him as a reader. But just to clean things up, I'll click on Corey and click remove and remove him from the role. So now he's gone. So the really nice thing about this is I can add individual users, and I can also add groups. And groups in Active Directory, as you well know, can be nested, can have, you know, almost arbitrary depth. So you can very quickly and very efficiently manage very large groups of people automatically by simply adding the groups themselves as contributors or readers to your virtual machine. And that concludes the RBAC demo. And so now it's back to Corey.
Thanks, George. So just to kind of wrap up here, I wanted to just mention four sort of big customers that we've worked with to bring infrastructure as a service and really sort of expand or enable solutions that they wanted. And I'll kind of just briefly touch upon them as I wrap up. And in fact, all of these do have case studies that you can go find and read up on, except the confused.com one. That one's relatively recent. So just to quickly run through them, you know, Telenor is using, actually used infrastructure as a service in the very early days because they needed to move from SharePoint 2007 to SharePoint 2013. And so they used the environment for a great test environment. What they actually said is it took what they thought was going to take 3 months, it took a couple of weeks to actually do their level of testing that they wanted to. And so they really spun up a lot to be able to do that dev test environment for SharePoint. Blinkbox, a great company. Actually, I think the genius behind the Blinkbox architecture may be in the audience. And so what Blinkbox is doing, it's a combination of infrastructure as a service, using replication between two regions to get a DR story, and then using media services to be able to do encoding directly in Azure and scale up as needed. And so they're able to take advantage of both the DR story with SQL Server and using always on to replicate, and then media services to be able to do encoding in the back end. Lufthansa is using Azure Pack, and so they've deployed that, and they end up using Azure primarily for DR from the on-prem solution. So they use DR for their SQL servers directly into Azure infrastructure as a service. And then finally, Confused.com, a very recent addition. They are a leading UK price-based analysis for insurance. And so they're actually using Azure to be able to run their entire website. And so they use a selection of services from automation, service bus. They actually control their costs using automation. It's where I got the idea for the demo. Of course, infrastructure as a service for their SQL servers. And so they've been running their primary site since August. And so it's been great to have them on the platform. And of course, the one we do like to talk about for sort of that auto, that massive scale one is Titanfall, a massive video game that was deployed on top of Azure. And it hosted actually more than 100,000 virtual machines to be able to launch this game. And so it's one of the sort of biggest tests we've had for hyperscale, and it passed. So that was exciting. So as a closing, when we look at IaaS and we look at infrastructure as a service in Azure, we really like to focus on enabling that hybrid experience that's great, giving you an enterprise-grade security that you can trust, and of course, hyperscale to meet your needs. We want to bring our cloud to you. We want to enable those connected services to be able to use the resources you want and be able to deploy when you want and how you want. That includes things like getting great agility, faster time to market, and overall cost reduction, especially if you're using the cloud with things like automation to shut things down when you're not using them. And you can use it at any time with any scale you want. Looking for more details, there's some, as part of the slide deck, you'll find there's some architecture blueprints that you can go into, the case studies that I mentioned. We do have some great blogs out there that we write to pretty regularly. And of course, you can always tweet me with questions or comments. Okay, and then the final thing here, please do an evaluation. It is important to us to see sort of how we're doing, what you thought. Did we hit the right content? Too low level, too high level? Please, you know, hit us hard. You know, be kind, but, you know, give us the right feedback. And make sure you do let us know how we can improve, because we'll be back. And so, great to have you guys. I'll put up on the screen additional sessions. There's tons of them that go into deep on almost every one of the slides. So please make sure you take a look at some of these, and I'll keep them up on the screen. We'll be here for a few minutes for some questions. And thank you guys so much for coming. Enjoy TechEd.